If you would like a free newsletter on this or other subjects, just give us a call at Christian Answers. The phone number is area code 512-218-8022. That's 512-218-8022. Or you could email us at cdebater@aol.com. That's cdebater@aol.com. Thank you.
Greetings and welcome once again to our program. I'm Larry Wessels, your host, and I want to thank you for joining us today. I'd like to begin this program by reading a section of scripture, and then I'll get into the topic for the day. It says in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly, that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from meats, which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth." But with that, I'd like to introduce our topic for today, which will be on the subject of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, otherwise known as the Jehovah's Witnesses. We're doing a very special program today, one that's a little out of character for what we usually do. We're shooting a program on location at a very dear person's home with her children, and she had a very personal, intensely personal encounter with the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society and the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'd like to go to our very special guest today. We're meeting in their home, and Audrey, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's just a very special pleasure for you to allow me to come in your home and talk with you today on this intensely personal subject in your own life, and one subject dealing with the Jehovah's Witnesses that actually they, because of their ability to go out and knock on people's doors and put their literature everywhere, they really touch millions of people's lives. So I think this video is going to really hit a lot of people right where they live, and where the Jehovah's Witnesses literally come on their doorstep when they come knocking. And of course, you have your three wonderful children here. We've got Jarrett there sitting in the back, Jason there, and Stacy, your daughter. And I see your sons are wearing their baseball hats.
Yes,
and,
sir.
Proud team, of them. Yep, and I think Stacy just made cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Well, Audrey, I guess what we ought to do for our viewers is kind of take them back a little bit in time. I will let the viewers know that there was a while there back in time where you didn't have your children right here next to you.
Very true, for about seven long years.
I did not
have my children.
Now we're talking about Jehovah's Witnesses here, but let's kind of go back in time now. Let's take the viewers back those 7 years back, right before it began.
Okay.
Let's just in a historical type of way explain to the viewers what happened. How did you lose your kids for 7 years? And then we'll go through the events that led to where we are now, where they're actually sitting next to you.
Exactly. Well, 7 years ago, I went through my divorce, and the judge gave me custody of the children, which was basically all I ever wanted. And about 2 months after I got custody of him, I found out I had cervical cancer and got really ill and called their father, asked him if he could take care of them for me for a year so that I could get back on my feet. And he assured me that they would be well taken care of and that at the end of that year, which would have been Stacy's first year of school, and that once she finished that school year, I would be able to have the kids back. And on that last day of school, when I went to go get my kids, I was handed a summons to appear in court, and they got me on abandonment. He had gone through the courts and got me for abandonment of my kids. Mm-hmm. And so custody was changed over to him.
Your ex-husband?
My ex-husband.
And now, your ex-husband, from what I understand, was involved with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
It didn't start out that way. In fact, it really took me really far back when I realized what he had gotten into.
Was he a Jehovah's Witness when you divorced him?
No. In fact, we were both very involved in a South First Baptist church. We had all the kids dedicated. We went to church on Sunday. We had Christmases, birthdays. I had no idea that this was what he would resort to. And when he told me about the woman that he wanted to marry, there was no mention of the religion. You know, it was really kept hush-hush as far as I was concerned. And it wasn't until several years later that I was able to really find out exactly what it was they were involved in. And then the kids I would get them on the weekends, and they would come home and tell me about the church that they were visiting. And I don't think I was really paying attention. I went through a time when I was really angry inside and rebellious in my own way. And I don't think I really was paying enough attention, because I think I'd have caught on a lot sooner than what I had. And they seemed so stable. You know, the kids had a big home out in the country, and you know, it was like the Brady Bunch. There were six kids between them and a mom and dad, and they went to church, and I thought at that point in time, that's a whole lot more than I could offer, that I could ever offer the kids. And then I ran into you.
And so you're talking, this went over a period of almost 7 years.
Right, this went on. They would come home and tell me things, and I saw and I felt walls coming up between me and the kids, and I could not understand where it was coming from.
Now, at this time, you've already figured out it was Jehovah's Witnesses?
I'm not even sure that at that point I did, because my mother believes a lot in the way that the Jehovah's Witnesses believe. Mm-hmm. She's not a practicing witness, but she tells me there's a lot of stuff that she does believe in. And when I would talk to my mom about it, she would reassure me there was nothing to worry about and that everybody needed to have something to believe in. And she would play more on, look how stable the kids are. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the stable home life. You know,
so
you're
that
single.
Kind of made your alert go down.
Right, because Mama said so.
Right.
You know, Mama told me not to worry, so I didn't.
Okay.
You know, I just...
And so, you went along all these years, just getting the visitation rights to your kids from
once,
time to time.
Once I was told, or once they told me that I had abandoned my kids, I would not have dared cross anybody because I was so afraid of losing my visitation. Mm-hmm. So anything that their dad wanted or any visitations he wanted to take away from me, I never fought him. Mm-hmm. Because I was so horrified of not ever getting to see them again. Mm-hmm. So I basically just went along with whatever it took just to keep seeing my kids.
I see. And so one thing led to another. And when did you start getting suspicious about your kids' religion, your husband's religion? What was it that really got you alert all of a sudden to Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, I met a man that came into my life, and he wanted a family, which I knew I could not have any more kids. And when he was with my children, he was so good with them. Christmas times would come around, They would get really, really excited at Christmas.
Your kids?
Yes, very excited.
And you had them over for visitation?
And I would have them on my Christmas holidays, and Larry and I would go, and we would just...
That's the name of your husband?
My husband, Larry. We would just go wild at Christmas, buying this and buying that, and just really having a big celebration. And then I would suggest, well, why don't y'all take, you know, some of your new toys home with you? And we tried that one year, and they came back the following weekend and told me they had all been thrown in the trash. And they started telling me, Mom, we're not allowed to celebrate Christmas at your house. And I would say, well, you know, that's too bad. You know, and it would make me start thinking, now, wait a minute, you know, where are they coming up with this? And then birthdays would roll around. And if I was fortunate enough to have one of them on their birthdays, I mean, I was fortunate. And, of course, Mom would make big deals out of it. And I started seeing a lot of resistance from them, and I kept thinking, this is not them. You know, this isn't normal. You know, they're normally really excited when it comes time to holidays. And I started hearing a lot more of, I can't do that, Mom. Jehovah God's, you know, will punish me. I would tell them, you know, why don't you ride on your bikes and go visit friends? We can't have them as friends, Mom. Jehovah God will punish us. A lot of this started coming out. And I think the day that I was slapped in the face with this religion was the day I remember Larry and I would put the kids to bed at 10 o'clock. And these kids would not go to sleep until Larry and I went to bed. And him and I, we would lay in the bed and we'd talk about this, you know, why, what's going on. And Stacy Lynn and I took a walk around the block one day. And we were holding hands, and she stopped in the middle of the street and she said, Mom, would you ever kill me? Would you ever kill the boys and I? And I just stopped dead in my track, and I said, Stacy, why would you ever believe that I would kill you? Well, Dad and Harriet showed us some material from the Jehovah's Witnesses, and Dad showed us a newspaper article where a mother wanted her kids out of the religion so bad that when she got her three children on the weekend, she shot all of them just so that they wouldn't go back into the religion.
Mm.
And by the time I got to the front door, I had lost it, because I realized then we've got a serious problem. If my own children think and have been told that I would go so far as to kill them, to keep them from this religion, really, which was a religion I knew nothing about. But that right there told me that there was something to hide, and that there was something terribly wrong with this picture. Because you don't start teaching kids as young as she was. I mean, she knew all about being murdered, being shot, all for the sake of this religion. And from that point on, I knew that something was not right, that they were being taught things that... And I, at first I took it as it was personal. They were doing what they could to discredit me with the kids, you know, and I took it as a personal battle. And I, like I said, I think from that day on, it was uphill, really, for me. Mm-hmm. At that time, it didn't seem like it, but from that point on, I really, my eyes got... enlightened, big time.
And I guess I can ask the kids for a second here. Jarrett, Jason, or Stacy, any one of you can ask me. Well, I guess go in order, I guess. We'll start with Jarrett, then Jason, then Stacy. During this time you came for visitation, you weren't allowed to have birthdays, you weren't allowed to have presents, and were you told anything at the Kingdom Hall about, you know, how your mom, was she some kind of threat to your religion, or what kind of attitude? I guess what I'm really asking is, did what you were being taught by the Jehovah's Witnesses have an impact on the way you acted around your mom? Now, she said it, obviously there was walls being thrown up, things were happening. What changed? What changed from the way you were before to after you got involved with this religion when you came to visit your mom?
Well, I was not free anymore, and when I always came down, yeah, I remember one time my mom bought a cake for us, and when she split it up between me and Jason, I would get in the car, and I wouldn't eat the cake.
Wouldn't eat the cake, because it went back to the religious teachings that you had. Jason, anything that came up during all this time?
Well, it came to one instant where at Easter time, she had asked us if we wanted to go Easter egg hunting, and I told her, no, I'm not going to Easter egg up, because they had the influence on me that my mom was bad and that she was doing all this stuff so we wouldn't believe them. I mean, it was just crazy at the time.
Okay, so you're saying because of the Easter egg thing that the teachings are give you the impression that she's into some kind of false religion, and if you want to keep Jehovah God happy with you, you better not participate in the evil things that your mom is doing. Is that basically what it comes down to?
Yes, and they came down to it where they were asking us, is she doing anything to you down there that you're making, that are you celebrating holidays down there? And we would try to, if we did, we would try to keep it a secret and not, I mean, tell them no. And it came down to one is that they asked us if my mom was doing drugs, because they thought she was crazy.
No, really?
And I think demonized, if I'm not mistaken, I was demonized at one point.
Oh, man.
But we just told them, no, she's not doing drugs. She's not crazy. Maybe it was y'all.
Well, Stacy, I mean, that was pretty powerful what your mom just said a minute ago about asking her if she would kill you. And that's pretty emotional. I mean, this must have had a big impact. These teachings you're getting from the Jehovah's Witnesses about the world coming to an end, and I guess they spent a lot of time teaching you that, you know, everything else is of the devil. Is you know, Jehovah God's looking over you real close, and you better walk the straight and narrow, or it's all lost. Is even to the point where you can't trust your own parents to keep, you know, because they're in another religion or something, they might shoot you. But anything else that was happening there that the Jehovah's Witnesses were doing in your life that was maybe coming between you and your mom?
Well, I remember one thing that they said that made me mad was when at Christmas time they told us that when we accepted a present, all we said was thank you. We don't say Merry Christmas or anything like that. We couldn't say anything else but thank you. Mm-hmm. Or just stuff like that, because they said that when we came back to my dad's house, that they knew when we had done something wrong, and so they always expected it to happen.
Now let me ask y'all again. Now, when you were in the your parents there were in the Jehovah's Witnesses, what did they require you? How many times a week? I'll just start with Stacy, and I'll just kind of ask each one of you a different question or something. But how many times a week did you have to go to church or go to the Kingdom Hall? Participate in a Bible study or something like that?
Two times a week we had to go to the Kingdom Hall, and we had one Bible study at our house when everybody from that part of the town came to our house. We studied there. And then, like, we had to be in a ministry school where we prepared a talk, and then we gave it in front of everybody.
And so that's like four different times during the week that you had to participate?
Yeah.
That you would recall? How many hours did that take?
Two hours for Sunday and Thursday, and like an hour for Tuesday.
Okay, so that takes a lot of your time up, doesn't it, to do all that? You didn't have as much time to go play with the neighborhood kids?
We weren't allowed to.
You weren't allowed to play with the neighborhood kids?
We weren't allowed to have any of the Jehovah's Witness friends over either, because my stepmom told my friends that not to even associate with me because I was bad association.
Oh, really? Man. Okay, well, Jason, let me ask you. Did you have to go out door to door, like knock on people's doors? Was this something that you had to engage in while you were over there associated with your...
Yeah, it took... I wasn't really happy about it because he had to walk all that way, but we did have to go almost every Saturday afternoon. We had to go out from about 9 o'clock till about noon, just walking out door to door. trying to get people to believe what we were saying.
And did you go by yourself, or did you go with other people?
I usually had to go with an adult because she thought that I was bad or something, and I wasn't able to behave on my own.
Mm-hmm. And just be the two of you going door to door, handing out Watchtower magazines and so forth. Now, which one of you two got the sore feet from doing something? Okay, it was Jarrett. Now, going door to door, knocking them, doing all this Jehovah's Witness work that they do, particularly on Saturdays, I guess, as Jason
said. Sore is an understatement. We're talking bruised.
Okay, tell me about those feet.
I did a lot more than they did because I was called the best one of them three, so I was able to go out with more people. I was able to go out with adults, and I was able to go out with my brothers, and I usually went out with her, and I was happy for that too, because I was able to talk about her with some things that was against this while we were walking.
Oh, okay, so you really got out there and did a lot more than a lot of folks. You just were, you're just more gung-ho?
I didn't want to.
Oh, okay.
I'm being made to.
Tell me, you were made to, but tell me about your feet. How bad did they get? Your mom?
Bad. Right now, it's even hurting by the big toe still because I walk too much.
Didn't you tell them that your feet were hurting?
I was afraid I was going to get in trouble.
Oh, because you would be violating Jehovah's command to go door to door and all that.
Well, they would think I'd be making up an excuse of why not to go.
Oh, okay.
But it came as bad because it was bad enough because we had to go to these meetings and all that, and they would teach us one thing, which we kind of thought was wrong and we kind of thought was right at the time because we were going there for 7 years. And then when we went down to my mom's house, she was telling us, y'all don't need to believe in this. I mean, they're teaching you the wrong stuff. It's wrong.
So you're getting two different stories.
But it just came to thought, believe our mom. I mean, it might be one against two, but she knows what she's talking about. And it came bad enough that we had a picnic table over there in Giddings, and us three would all go under there, and we would talk about what we'd do when we went down for the weekend to the house, and we would talk about, like, just ask her if we could have a party or something like that, or go swimming or something like that, and most of the time we were scared to do any of that stuff because of what they were teaching us.
Okay, so right now I understand you two guys play baseball. Now, as Jehovah's Witnesses, could you get out there and play baseball? Do they allow Jehovah's Witnesses to play baseball?
Well, sometimes we have, like, gatherings of all the Jehovah's Witnesses, and sometimes, most of the time we wouldn't, but sometimes we'd go out there, and all of us Jehovah's Witnesses, no one else, go out there and play. It was just us.
Okay, so they only let you play if you're with all the rest of the Jehovah's Witnesses, but, like, just to go out with all the different people, just a cross-section of America, let's say, different people of different religions, and just other guys your age, just to get on a regular old baseball team and get in a baseball league, you couldn't do that as a Jehovah's Witness.
No, because they thought that they thought that we'd have too much spirit in having a team to win, and it said that it was wrong to go out there and say that we want to go out there and we want to beat them and kill them, you know, like.
Okay, so they have this attitude about winning. Now, it seems like that would translate then to other games. It's like, there's a lot of games you play where
football?
You're trying to win. Yeah, so how does this attitude, can you play football? Or, it's the same problem.
No
sports?
As long as if you were going out there saying we want to win this game, it would be wrong. Because even if we go to their house, like, on the weekends now, and we'd go and play softball, we'd ask what the score is, and he'd say we aren't keeping score. We're just doing this for fun. We're not out here to play teams and win.
Oh, okay. So it sort of kind of reminds me of the military, I guess, if they were defending the country. You don't want to win. I guess you don't get in the military. But I guess they taught you against doing any kind of military service of any sort, being
definitely
in the Army.
Not military service.
Yeah.
So pledging allegiance.
Also, when we were, me and Jason, Scott and John, our oldest brothers, they used to play baseball, whether they were in Jehovah's Witness. And when me and Jason got old enough to play baseball, they didn't let them play baseball anymore because they didn't want us to play baseball. They were like making our life miserable. And the other three boys, they always got everything. Now it's like now, like me and Jarrett down there, we don't not have like not. I don't really have not one pair of jeans that are mine that could fit me. I have to go borrow some from my brothers, and I barely have any shirts to wear either. Mm-hmm. And it got too bad where I had to wear my brother's underwear.
Well,
I mean,
you get pretty desperate there.
That's desperate. And when we went down there, they would take their three boys shopping, and us three would sit there and watch back and watch them get all these toys and watch them get brand new jeans and shoes. And I asked them once if I could just get a pair of shoes because I had to wear my school shoes down there, mess them all up and playing in the mud and all that. Mm-hmm. I asked him, could I get a pair of play shoes to run around the house and go out? And he said, no, you don't live down here that often, so there's no reason for me to get you a pair. And I said, well, those are my school shoes. He said, well, there's still no reason to get you a pair of shoes.
A lot of this fellowshipping going on right now.
Right now, it's like every time we go up to one of our friends that we used to talk to, they walk away or she tells them to get away from us.
The Jehovah's Witnesses are following that idea of shunning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're getting a little ahead of the game here, but I understand what you're talking about. And I understand, Stacy, you're a cheerleader now. Is that mm-hmm. correct? Could you be a cheerleader, saying rah, rah, win, win? I assume you couldn't be a cheerleader if you're a Jehovah's Witness, just because it usually involves cheering on a team to win a game or something of that nature. So that would have stopped you from being a cheerleader, which you are at the moment.
Because I couldn't even go to pep rallies, or they would say that I would die or something awful would happen. Or
oh, if you participate in those things, or mm-hmm. how about saluting the flag, or can't do that either, right?
Mm-hmm.
No military, no flags,
no nothing.
No games.
No life.
No friends.
We also
You gotta stay away from non-Jehovah's Witness kids.
We go behind the backs and we have friends down there.
You sneak around when they're watching.
But we have to. I mean, we can't.
Right.
We can't do it any other way. We can't ask them, oh, can I get on the phone and call my friend, please?
So
you
find this very oppressive, this kind of life. It sounds that way.
It's like a stem cord. You just have a straight life, going to meetings, going to school, coming home, doing your homework, playing with your brothers and sisters, no one else, going to meetings.
Just a broken record type of life. Just round and round she goes. Well, now this is a good opening part of the show for our viewers here, because now we can get back to your mother here, and we can see now what life was like for your kids, and you were probably starting to get some of that feedback and getting really concerned.
The memories are just flooding in right now. I didn't think they'd be there, but they're just flooding me.
Okay, so now we want to find out, because I'm sure there's viewers out there that may be finding themselves in the same situation. You know, there might be a mother out there who's lost custody of her children to an ex-husband or something, and she's now realizing, oh no, are my kids really going through that? You know, or there, some elder relatives involved in some cult or something like this. Now, you are starting to get very disturbed about what's happening here.
Oh yeah.
And let's go back in time now again and lead us up through this and how you have your kids next to you at this moment. What you've now realized that they're in a Jehovah's Witnesses, there's things happening here, you know, their presents are being thrown in the trash and all these kind of things. You know, your daughter asked you if she's going to kill you. What is the next thing that happened that led to getting your kids out?
I started contacting different attorneys.
Okay.
And in hopes that I could just go back and just flat out ask for my kids back. And I was getting a lot of attorneys that wanted to take the case, but they wanted $10,000 retainers.
Have you, at this time when you're doing this, had you mentioned anything about this to your ex-husband?
No.
Okay.
Because the kids, a lot of times they told me things and begged me I mean, I would get so angry inside. One instance, one Christmas, Stacy Lynn, the kids had to go to the library for when they were having their Christmas plays and stuff. Well, these kids had to sit in the library, and one year Stacy made me a Christmas card, and she had put it in her backpack and was going to bring it to me that weekend. And Harriet found it in her stepmother found it in her backpack, and she got a spanking for being a sneak, and then she got a spanking for making something that had to do with Christmas. Little things like this that would happen, and I wanted to hurt her, and I wanted to hurt him. I could not imagine them doing this to these kids. I mean, the kids were so outgoing. It was just really beyond me, and I started contacting a few attorneys, and the money was just, I just couldn't believe it was going to cost me so much money to go get my kids back. But there had been a lot of illegal things that had been done through the courts because of this religion. A lot of illegal things went on, and I did not know how I was going to fight that. And I went through many days where I tore my home up because of anger, frustration. The kid, I mean, just things that they would come and tell me, you know, I would go and pick Stacy up on a weekend, and we would go into McDonald's where we always met, and she'd grab my hand and run me into the bathroom, and then she would start pulling out all these football ribbons from her underwear. And she was so proud of her football ribbons, and that was the only way she could get this stuff to me.
Hide it in her clothes.
Hide it in her clothes. And then the boys started bringing things home in their clothes and asking me to hang on to them. They weren't allowed to have it at the house. Stacy brought home in her clothes a crown that a friend had given her as a best friend token. And when Stacy was young, she used to love, like I guess normal little girls do, dress up as princesses. And she was so proud of that crown, and she brought it over to me. And I think to this day, I still got all the stuff that they brought in via their clothes. But I would sit and watch this, and I would say, you know, here is this religion that is supposed to be really good for my kids, but all it's teaching them to do is to be sneaks and to hide. And, you know, like I said, things just started building up, and that's not any way for, you know, like, when you love God and you trust Christ and He is your Savior, you don't have to sneak or hide anything. You know, that's the way I believe. And, I knew in my heart I was right. And just...
So were the lawyers the solution?
I thought they would be.
So what came of it? What became of it?
I never had the money.
Several more years went by?
A couple more years went by, and then back in 90, I had a devastating illness, and it put me off my feet for a year. And I just couldn't understand why God was letting this happen to me, you know, because I was never going to be able to get the money to fight for my kids if I was going to be down on my back for a year. And I'm staying home, and I'm watching TV. I'm doing a lot of praying. And again, a lot of frustration, a lot of anger. And my husband and I sat and talked about it. And he would keep my dream going that one of these days, when I got well, I would go to work and I could afford to get my kids back. And one day, sitting on the couch, flipping through channels, I came across the program. I'll never forget it. And it was about the Watchtower. And I sat and I watched that hour-long show. And when that show was over with, I was absolutely horrified, because the reality of this religion was right before me. And then I started panicking, because the one part of the show that I identified with immediately was when it started talking about the kids that were the innocent victims and how they were not allowed to associate with other people. And they were naming off characteristics of a Jehovah's Witness child, and I saw it in my kids. The alienation, the low self-esteem, the thoughts that were going through their heads, the constant talk of the end of times and the world coming to an end, and Mom, you'll never get to go to paradise with us because you're demonized. I mean, all of it just hit me right in the face. And I think that was the first time I realized not only are my kids in trouble, serious trouble, but I am too. Because how am I going to be able to fight this?
You know, that reminds me of what we opened in the show with on the scripture out of 1 Timothy chapter 4 about forbidding to marry. And I think you had told me before we started taping that Stacy didn't even care about getting married because you said the world was going
to
end.
Oh, yes, yeah. All of them. You know, Larry and I would talk to the kids about, you know, well, what do you want to do when you go to college? And we want you to be a football player. And, oh, no, Mom. No, you don't go to college and you don't get married because Jehovah God will kill you. That was their one saying that they said over and over and over again. Jehovah God will kill us. Anything.
Like a mean old guy up there just with a big baseball bat ready to smash you the minute you do anything wrong.
I would go, you know, I'd have to go through I'd have to replay. And they found, I saw them take comfort. The boys are miracles from the word go. They're not even supposed to be sitting here. Mm-hmm. Stacy Lynn died at birth. She should not even be sitting here. So, when
what do you
I
mean
would
she died at birth?
Her heart literally stopped.
Her heart stopped?
Her heart stopped.
And they were able to revive
her? And they were able to revive her.
Praise God.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, I would go back and I would keep telling the kids of how special they really were. You know, you boys weren't even supposed to be breathing right now. You are miracles from the word get-go. Mm. And when I would tell them how special they really, really are, I could see them get a little comfort in that. Mm-hmm. I could see these kids, every child needs to feel that they're special. And all of that was being taken away from them. No more birthdays, no more Christmases. And what made it really, really hard was because their dad and I celebrated all of these things. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely confusing to me. Because here was a man that stopped at nothing for Christmas and his children. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and I just kept over and over and over again telling them how very special each and every one of them were.
Okay, so you've seen this show on Access Television.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're really
I'm
afraid.
Horrified. I am scared. I think because I realized for the first time in my life, Audrey, this is not your battle. Mm-hmm. This is a spiritual battle. This had nothing to do with me. This was a spiritual battle, and I did not know. I could come up with all the money in the world to fight my battle, mm-hmm. but how was I going to fight this spiritual battle?
Right. So what happened next?
I called Larry Wessel. I saw the Dayspring Evangelist little logo on the TV, and I mean, I couldn't get to the phone fast enough. And I called, and I got a recording, and you said leave your name and number, and I told you in the message that you all were offering pamphlets and everything on this religion. And I said in my recording that I wanted everything. I want everything you can send me. I've got to know more about this religion, mainly to calm me down. Because, like I said, once I saw the show, it was just, my Lord, my kids are in this.
I need to make a mention to the viewing audience that in 1990, I'm Larry Wessels, you're talking about,
exactly.
I was director of a ministry called Dayspring Evangelism, which is more of a local ministry in Austin, Texas, doing Access Television on the local cable channels. And at that time, we offered plenty of free literature and pamphlets and things. I still remember that recording. And tell us a little bit more about what happened after that. I think I did send you a few pieces of literature.
Oh, my Lord. Well, I got a box about, I guess it was 3 or 4 days later, and I don't even believe that you and I had talked at this point. I believe you just answered my request, and I got tapes, books, any kind of pamphlet that you could want. And, of course, I had nothing to do for the next year but sit and learn about the religion. I just got so much information, and my husband and I listened to the tapes, learning how to. It really helped us because a lot of things that they would come up with, Larry and I together learned how to answer them. You know, and we basically prepared for that spiritual battle so that we could do our part of what God required of us.
And I remember you, we organized a time to meet with the kids.
Yes,
when you
we
had
did.
A long visitation.
You had explained to me when we finally were able to make contact, you explained to me that key word, brainwashed. And I asked you to help me get them unbrainwashed. And you didn't hesitate.
Yeah, I remember it was like a 3-hour session at your house.
A 3-hour session. Actually, it was from 6 o'clock in the evening till 10.
Really? I lost track of time. We were over there.
And we all sat in my living room floor with Jehovah Witness material.
That's right. In fact, in that session, I didn't take anything in there except Jehovah's Witness literature.
Exactly.
Of which I have the stuff I took that night.
Exactly.
It's all here. The Awake magazines.
Exactly.
The Watchtower magazines. I've got back here. I've just got too much here. I've got a whole box full of their literature. This is their own Bible. We used the New World Translation that night.
Mm-hmm.
Went through, and we found out by looking at it, kids. And as you remember, we discovered together by just looking at the Jehovah's Witness literature themselves. If they predicted the end of the world, they got their ideas about the end of the world from pyramids, all kinds of end of the world dates that never came to pass.
Exactly.
Do y'all have any comments you'd like to make on your thoughts from after that 3 or 4 hour session where you were just looking at watching?
Well, by then I was kind of figuring that I did believe my mom because you came along and you were teaching us that, you know, they predicted the world to end in 1975, you know. It's 1992 or 1993 now, and we're still living. But at this time, we were not only experiencing mental abuse, we were also experiencing physical abuse, and that's why we were so low down, and we didn't really want to do anything. We went to her house because they were popping us with the belt and the paddle, and they were kicking us, and that really hurt us, and that lost my pride completely of what kind of a person I was.
And then to have all the ample evidence that now you know for sure this religion that they're cramming down your throats is not even true.
And for you to come along and, I mean, show us this, it was like a big relief because now I knew that it was not true, any of it that they were saying to us, that they were telling us about how Jesus died on that straight stake.
The torture stake and all that. In fact, it's kind of funny you bring that up. I don't know if I can find it here in a moment, but it's down here. It'd take me too long to find it for the video, but I've got the book by the Jehovah's Witnesses called The Harp of God, where they actual Jehovah's Witness book showed Jesus crucified on a cross in their early ones. Then they changed it to the torture stake, where he's just like this, like you're talking about. Too bad I can't grab it out of here. I've got too many books down here to find it quick enough.
The cross and the Trinity was the two items that these kids would argue at Blue Streak with me about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, I was wrong. They were right.
You know, it's amazing that the founder of Jehovah's Witnesses, Charles Taz Russell, he's buried just outside of where the Pittsburgh Steelers play football at a Three Rivers Stadium in up there in Pennsylvania. Outside the football stadium is a cemetery called Rosemont United Cemetery. Anyone that doubts me can go there and see it for themselves. But the founder of Jehovah's Witnesses is buried there. He's got a great big old pyramid tombstone because the Jehovah's Witnesses, when they first started and everything, used pyramids to determine the end of the world. 1914, 1918, 1925, 1975. All these dates were based back on the pyramids. But the founder of Jehovah's Witnesses has a pyramid tombstone, and on that tombstone of the founder of Jehovah's Witnesses, Charles Taz Russell, out of Three Rivers Stadium outside there, is a cross. He has a cross on his tombstone inside of a crown, which I think Stacy likes crowns. So. But anyway, but it shows you the inconsistency of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
The founder used pyramids to predict the end of the world, and they're still doing it today. And he has a cross on his very tombstone. And it was the Jehovah's Witnesses that gave him that tombstone then.
Well, now they know they can't put, they can't set a date when the end of the world's going to come because they've predicted it too many times and none of them had come true. If they did again, they would get a lot of
Said that after 1925, but they went ahead and did it in 1975. I've got books here. I'll just show this one to the audience since it's easy to reach. I've got this book here called Life Everlasting in the Freedom of the Sons of God. This is published by the Watchtower, and this is just one example of many. But right there, copyright 1966, I don't know if the camera can get it or not, by Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of Pennsylvania. Sounds familiar from other things. But if you look here on pages, I'll just flip it here. If you look here on pages 29 and 30, I'm going to try to get my cameraman, if he can zoom in on this little area I've got my finger on. Right there at the top part of the page, it says, according to this trustworthy Bible chronology, 6,000 years from man's creation will end in 1975. And the seventh period of 1,000 years of human history will begin in the fall of 1975. And now with that, it goes on to talk about how, all people, governments, everything's going to be destroyed, wiped out. And God, Jehovah God, is going to come back and create a new paradise on earth. We've all heard about that, right? But anyway, this is just one of many books I went through with the kids that night, showing them just one after another of their false prophecies. And the Bible says in Deuteronomy 18, it says that if a man claims to be a prophet of God, like the Jehovah's Witnesses do here in their this particular Watchtower magazine from April 1st, 1972, their April Fool's Watchtower, they claim to be God's prophet. In this book, look on page 197, and in Deuteronomy 18 it says, if a man claims to be a prophet of God, he has to always prophesy correctly, because God never makes a mistake.
I remember you telling them that.
God never makes a mistake.
That's right.
And Watchtower over and over again claims to be the only truth, the only one that's going to make it. Everybody else is of the devil. And so the kids saw this. Now the kids know what they're into. You've been shown all this material. What happened next after this meeting? What did you do then to try to finally have the kids be back with you?
From that night on, nobody's life was the same. The kids found that freedom to come to me, and all of a sudden, things, hidden things that had not been talked about, beatings, physically, emotionally, sexually, everything just started pouring out of these kids. I knew that night I'd won their trust. And that was the most important thing for me to obtain with these kids. That's where the wall was coming up. Mm-hmm. I was losing their trust. Mm-hmm. And that night that you talked with them, I got that trust back. And I needed that before I could do anything.
Right. Okay, and then you started pursuing trying to get a child custody.
I did. I realized, again, it was a spiritual battle. And I had been praying for the wrong things the whole time and didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And I just, over and over and over again, I prayed, I don't have the money to fight this. And my concern was, okay, if they wind up staying with their father, I can't let him have them spiritually. Mm-hmm. If he's going to insist on keeping them physically, he can't have them spiritually. I just couldn't let it happen. And I started back to work, and within a month, on a silver platter, an attorney was handed to me that agreed to take the case for a lot less than these $10,000 quotes.
Why? Just out of the goodness of their heart, or providence.
All I can say is thank you, Jesus. I don't know any other way to put it, because for all the years that I tried and all the years that I was turned down, and then having the realization of what kind of a battle this truly was, and myself acknowledging that, I mean, God opened doors left and right, and none was slammed in my face, not like it had been the years before. As I learned about the Jehovah's Witnesses, he showed me so much more.
So the key, a lot of the key was just dispelling the darkness of, I guess, basically ignorance about what the religion teaches and believes.
Exactly.
Once you know what they're doing, then you could deal with the situation.
Well, not just that, but instead of me sitting back going, poor, poor, pitiful me, I don't have my kids, he's got the kids, it's just so much deeper than that. I mean, we're talking about, I had a daughter coming up upon the age of accountability. And I wanted her to go to heaven. I wanted her to be spirit-filled. I wanted her to know Christ like I knew Christ. And I knew she wasn't getting that over there. I know that they're lost. I know their souls are very lost. And the thought of their souls being lost hurt me a lot worse than the fact of me not ever having them again. Because I pretty much figured I was going to die young anyway, and I did not want to have to die knowing that they were going to be left, and if Christ was to come tomorrow, they wouldn't go. And that scared me.
Well, what happened then now with the lawyer? As you
I walked in, I got my first appointment with him, and I told him, we set up our time, and he said, bring everything that you have. Bring everything you have. And I said, are you sure? Bring everything you have. So I walked in with my box.
All your box of material about Jehovah's Witnesses.
My box of material, and I set it on his desk, and the first thing I handed him was a transcript of a court case that was in this information.
In fact, I think I have that somewhere here. Yes, here it is. I have to get a plug in for this, because there may be people watching that need this help. It's called, I'll get it on this camera here. It's called Refutation of Preparing for Child Custody Cases. Okay, Jehovah's Witnesses have their own prepared documents on helping their Jehovah's Witness people win child custody cases. This book is prepared by Witness Incorporated. And we can give you that mailing address to contact them. They're out in California. You can just call us or write us, and we'll be glad to pass that information on to you, because it's an outstanding book, Reputation of Preparing for Child Custody Cases, because this book refutes the way the Jehovah's Witnesses, the techniques they use to win child custody cases. And also he's got Preparing for Child Custody Cases. So. These are the things you're referencing to.
Right.
Now, time's starting to get short on us here, so we'll have to proceed a little more quickly as time flies. But you've got these materials I just mentioned, and you've got the other things. What happened next?
Went to the attorney. At first he thought I was crazy, because he told me that you cannot bring religious issues up into a court of law. And I said, number one, don't tell me you can't do that, because Jehovah's Witnesses have no respect, nor do they believe in a court of law. And I knew this for a fact because of what I'd read. Number two, I'm going to bring it up, because this is what is destroying my kid's life. So, you know, you either want the case or you don't. And I told him, before you make a decision, read this testimony, and then you let me know. I believe I was called within 24 hours. And he said, you are opening up a can of worms, and you could lose big time. But if you want to fight it, we'll fight it. And I told him, only if I could bring the religion into the courtroom, because this was the basis of the destruction of my children. So we sat down and started preparing for trial. We took them to a psychologist. I had a 2-week, it was just so wonderful out of him. I had 2 weeks with him in the summer. In that 2 weeks, we got him to a psychologist. We had a woman come to the home to do home studies, all of which their dad and stepmother rejected. The courts ordered us to do this. They don't believe in psychologists. They even had in what you had given me, how a Jehovah's Witness is supposed to answer a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I mean, they give
you...
They have
pat answers on how to deal in court trials.
They tell you exactly how... They tell a Jehovah's Witness exactly how to answer. Mm-hmm. And that though we don't have any respect for worldly people, such as psychologists and stuff, there are certain ways that you have to answer them so that we're not seen, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And we started preparing... the psychologist, I've got several places in here where the psychologist, I told her, I said, you know, this is really very sad what's being done to my children. Mm-hmm. And the psychologist told me, this is not sad, this is sick.
Mm-hmm. Briefly read it.
I've got a... Stacy, Jason, and Jared are bright and engaging children who all appear to be showing signs of distress and agitation about the current living conditions. Stacy was quite agitated, asking me repeatedly if I thought she would die if she attended a pep rally. I observed a deep sadness about her inability to choose her own friends. Apparently, Mr. and Mrs. Crockett are involved in the Jehovah's Witnesses, and these rules are associated with the mandates of the church. I notice a big problem of low self-esteem. Being punished with a stick called the rod of discipline. Again, her talking about Mr. Crockett's refusing to participate with the home study so that a psychologist could come in and give both sides a fair chance as to, you know, where they're... Mm-hmm. Jason is extremely outgoing and adamant about the discomfort in his father's home. My impression is that this child is angry, and again, the big word, alienated. Mm. Very alienated. Seems to be quite upset and uncertain how to extricate himself from this home. Jason is very depressed and is a very angry child who at one time stated that he would rather live in a foster home than to continue to live with the situation as it was. He longs to play team sports and to have a chance to choose his own friends. Jarrett expressed concerns about being disfellowshipped from the Jehovah's Witnesses if he talked openly with anyone. I am seeing behavior in these children that indicate daily frustrations and difficulty and isolation. I mean... Mm-hmm.
It just goes on and on.
Isolation, mm-hmm. alienation.
All going back to that religion.
It's just so sad. When I see these kids in the last year, they are so outgoing.
And they both play team sports now?
Team
and cheerleader.
Sports. I've got myself a cheerleader. Stacy told me that was her dream. Mom, I wish I could be a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Stacy, one of these days you will. I got them back in February of 1992, and by May of 1992, she had made cheerleader.
You know, and I think before we started taping, you told me your sons, one of them had hit a home run.
Yes.
Who had a home run?
Where's our game ball?
Okay, and the other one had pitched three innings and
no-hitter.
So, I mean, talk about a stark contrast. But what we still haven't told our viewers, as time flies on us here, so you armed the attorney.
Okay,
Now, what happened next? Obviously, it's going to be good.
I called him in July. This was when I had them for the 2 weeks. And I said, Zane, ready or not, here I come. I'm coming after my kids. I want them out of the religion. And he basically, in so many words, told me I didn't have the courage to do it. And I said, we'll see ya in court. I was able to get them out on a temporary restraining order. Many things, like he plays in a band. Mm-hmm. And he would go and play in these bands till all hours of the night and carry all the kids with him. Mm. He also drinks. So I would worry my weekends, you know, if he's playing in the band and he's drinking and he's coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. This to me was not a normal religious practice for somebody that was so intent on their religion.
Right.
Did a lot of contradictory things that were going
sounded
on.
Sounded like he was sneaking around a little himself.
No, I'm telling you. I mean, he told me, he said, you can't use the religion in court. And I told him, I said, I may not be able to, but I know who will. And I told him Jesus Christ, and he laughed at me. And so when we went for the temporary orders, they did wind up letting the kids go back and finish the rest of their time with their dad until we could have a more permanent hearing. And the judge talked to all three kids in the chambers, and he came out and he had told us that these kids were being severely abused, and it wasn't just physical. It was deep emotional wounds that could possibly not be healed if things did not change. And the kids brought up to the judge about a Larry who came and talked to the children about the Jehovah's Witness religion, and that's what made them realize that they were in something bad. And the judge in the courtroom let this out, and when the kids went home, they had so many people coming up and asking them, they wanted to know who this Larry was. Who was it that told them all the lies about the religion?
Now that's an interesting thing. The Jehovah's Witnesses wanted to know who told them about the lies. But now, as we've stated already, kids, did you see any other literature that night that wasn't Jehovah's Witness literature? It was all their literature. Mm-hmm. That was full of lies.
And when it was that it was.
When I went back to the right when we left that Sunday, we went to the Kingdom Hall for the Sunday meeting, and after the meeting, before the meeting was over, she hit me with the book in the stomach, and after that,
who did?
Stepmom.
Your stepmom hit you with a book
in the stomach.
Why?
Because I was acting funny. And she gave me one in the stomach, and then I
right in the Kingdom Hall.
And I went up to my dad and this other man named Brother Rivers, and I told him that this guy named Larry told me that y'all Jehovah's Witnesses got the end of the world by a pyramid. And they looked at me and they said, "Don't believe him."
But they didn't give any evidence.
Well,
they didn't sit there and show you the actual.
What she'll do is see, my stepbrother, his name is Sean. So when we're going up there, he gets hit all the time when he's in the meetings, because he might look at his fingernails and pick at him a little, you know, look up, pay attention, and then she'll slap him and say, "Stop his fingernails." Well, when I was about 6 years old, a long time ago, we went to a meeting and she had to calm me down about 10 times to pay attention. She took me home and had the nerve to hit me with the paddle 10 times in the butt. She had the nerve to do it. I didn't even think about it because I couldn't. I mean, and it was stuff like that that made her look bad in her name, because now it all turned back on her, and now we're not her kids anymore. We're my mom's kids.
And what hurt us three feelings the most is the night the Thursday night when we came home from the meeting before the fighting, before we left the house, he said, before I say anything, I would choose my wife over y'all three. And that just hurt our feelings the most.
That always hurts when a father tells his own kids that he would.
And then a couple weeks and weekends ago, when everybody was gone, she took me, us three, in a meeting room, and she said, "Y'all will feel sorry for choosing cheerleading and baseball of your father." And I was just thinking, our dad is gonna be sorry later for choosing her over us.
Yeah. So, getting back to the court trial now, so you had the judge, he came out, he said it was.
He was angry, because I was allowed to bring up about them not being allowed to celebrate their birthdays and the Christmases and how they wanted to. Well, the judge decided that he was going to go and ask them for theirself, and he came out shaking his head. He said, this is unbelievable. So he told us that he wanted us to go through the psychological and all this, and which we did. He would not participate, but we went ahead and did it. Mm-hmm. And they called my attorney and told me that they were bringing all of these attorneys in from New York, from the world headquarters up there, and that I had attacked their religion and that I would pay dearly for it and that I would probably never see my kids again. And I just kept that smile and said, come on. And the day, January 28th, when we went to go to court, I mean, we were armed and ready. And he walked in and announced to me, they're yours.
Your ex-husband? Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't want to fight you. Take them and go. Never, nothing.
So just a lot of threats, but then
when it all came down to it, it was they weren't going to fight me. They had me scared there for a while, mm-hmm. you know, because I really thought, well, you know, I know people get sued for things like this, but it wasn't enough to make me back down, mm-hmm. because we're not talking, again, I wasn't talking about me losing them physically anymore. Mm-hmm. It was losing them spiritually, mm-hmm. and I just...
You held your guns, and all the threats and intimidation didn't work.
No way.
And when it came down to it, on the day, they caved in.
They caved in and said,
and now you have your kids.
Now, these kids go through a lot of persecution now. You know, they come home, and just not too long ago, they were at the church, and a couple of girls went to talk to Stacy, and it was told to stay away from Stacy because she was bad now. You don't associate with her. You don't talk to her, mm-hmm. you know, and I have to tell her how special she is to me, mm-hmm. and it ends Sunday night.
They still see some of their old Jehovah's Witness associates and stuff like that. And
I'm not sure how much. I know that they do still continue to take the kids to the church. I do know they do that, but then I've got the satisfaction of knowing that come Sunday night, they're back here with me.
But now it's our... Dad, he's not mean anymore. He's like, he's real nice. He knows he can't do anything about it now since we're moving. He knows he can't do anything about it. He knows that he better go ahead and take the chance now and go ahead and see us for the last time. But what hurts us and him is it's not. Sometimes we call him. We say we don't want to go down. Sometimes it's him, and sometimes we do not want to go down because of her. It used to be her and. It used to be that every time we go down there, if we did something wrong, we'd get the paddle. And we didn't want to go down there. We usually call and cancel a weekend. And he would get real mad because he knew it wasn't really him, it was her.
That is one thing that I want to say, and if he ever sees this program, I really do not feel that I'm very far off. I've had the opportunity to talk to Zane a little bit these last couple of weeks because we are fixing to move out of state, and inside I hear a deep sense of relief that I'm getting the kids out. Mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on it, but I really think that Zane is not real sure anymore, mm-hmm. either, because not only did we increase their confidence in knowing that the religion is one of the biggest hoax, mm-hmm. but it also destroyed his. Mm-hmm. And Zane was not a born into Jehovah's Witness. He got this purely by marriage only.
Right.
And I really, and deep inside, I hope that I destroyed or knocked down some of the confidence he had in the church or in what he perceives as his God, mm-hmm. or his Christ. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell one thing. I don't know how much time we have, but to any mother that has a child in this, one of the things I used to think about at night was if my child got hurt and needed blood for a long time there, if one of them got hurt or went into the hospital for surgery, that was their mother, and I wasn't even thought of. And a horrible thought is if my kid needed blood, would they save my child's life? And they would not.
Right, because Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in blood transfusions.
Exactly.
And that's one, we do a radio show, and just someone last week called in on our live call-in show and asked about Jehovah's Witnesses and blood transfusions. And I said, well, you know, people talk about Jim Jones and Guyana. People talk about
David Koresh
and Waco, these people dying. But the number one killer cult out there, I believe, is the Jehovah's Witnesses. There's millions of Jehovah's Witnesses around, worldwide, and all those millions of people are in jeopardy of dying because their organization won't allow them to have a life-saving blood transfusion. And they make up all kinds of excuses. They pervert the text.
And they're sneaky. These people are good. These people are real good at what they do. They know how to completely push you out of the picture. And I'm here to tell you, with the right equipment and the right knowledge, they're only going to push you as far as you let them. Because when all is said and done, it's a spiritual battle.
Right. Spiritual.
When all is said and done.
Well, I want to thank you, Audrey, for just a wonderful testimony. I want to thank you kids for hanging in there and telling the people from your heart what you thought about all these things. And I want to thank our viewers for tuning in and hearing what we had to say today. I would like to invite all our viewers to call or write the number that's on the screen or at the end of the program. We'll be more than happy to give you any literature, maybe not as much as Audrey received. Okay, I want to get off that, get out of that bind real fast. But we do have a lot of literature we can send and material, our free catalogs. We have a number of audio tapes, video tapes, and books that may help you, including the address to this Preparing for Child Custody case, in case you as a viewer out there find yourself in the same predicament that Audrey found herself in. And so we want to encourage you to call or write. We want to thank you for joining us today. And just remember to trust the Lord. Things may look bad, but God in His providential hand can see you through it.
Check out our websites, BibleQuery.org. This site answers 7,700 Bible questions. HistoryCart.com. This site reveals early church history and doctrine, proving Roman Catholicism is not historically or doctrinally viable. MuslimHope.com. This site is a classic refutation of Islam, a counterfeit religion created by Muhammad. Free newsletters are also available.